This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring, ring with the harmonies of let our rejoicing rise high ever listening skies. Let it resound loud as the rolling sea. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the facing the rising sun of a new day begun. Let us march on till victory.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Ashe. We'll pour it to the creative spirit. The great Ashe out of which we all emerge, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shillit, the Noor. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open-air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Porto, Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward coasts. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Kwame
Ture, John Henry Clark, John Dr. G. Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
Ashe.
History.
is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
I must emphasize at the outstart that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is not a politician. So I'm not here this afternoon as a Republican, nor as a Democrat. Not as a Mason, nor as an L.
Well, tell us what you're here for.
Not as a Protestant, nor a Catholic. Not as a Christian, nor a Jew. Not as a Baptist, nor a Methodist. In fact, not even as an American. Because if I was an American, the problem that confronts our people today wouldn't even exist. So I have to stand here today as what I was when I was born, a black man. Before there was any such thing as a Republican or a Democrat, we were black. Before there was any such thing as a Mason or an Elk, we were black. Before there was any such thing as a Jew or a Christian, we were black people. In fact, before there was any such place as America, we were black. And after America has long passed from the scene, there will still be black people. I'm going to tell you like it really is. Every election year, these politicians are sent up here to pacify.
That's right.
They're sent here and set up here by the white man. This is what they do. They send drugs in Harlem down here to pacify us. They send alcohol down here to pacify us. They send prostitution down here to pacify us. Why, you can't even get drugs in Harlem without the white man's permission. You can't get prostitution in Harlem without the white man's permission. You can't get gambling in Harlem without the white man's permission. Every time you break the seal on that liquor bottle, that's a government seal you're breaking. Oh, I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled.
The 20 election isn't a few weeks away. It's already here. Millions of Americans are already voting. Make sure you stand up and join them. There will always be reasons to think your vote doesn't matter. That's not new. What is new is a growing movement for justice, equality, and progress on so many issues. This really is a tipping point, and that momentum only continues if we win this election. But it's going to be close. It could come down to a handful of voters just like you. So I'm asking you to bring this thing home. Leave no doubt. Vote early.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my brothers and sisters, and welcome to another Tuesday evening edition of the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers, so pleased to be with you here this evening. Thank all of you for your patience. We are part of the TimeForAnAwakening.com network, which is a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. And we are here today to talk about the upcoming election. This time next week, Americans all over this country will be casting their ballots, discussing, watching the CNN, watching ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, attempting to see who will lead this country for the next 4 years. So we thank you for being with us here. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but we want to do it in terms of the perspective of how it impacts the African community. And we thought we would give you a little historical flashback there with the powerful speech by Malcolm X, which was done by Denzel Washington in the movie by Malcolm X. But we thought we would give you just a little remembrance of his statement, the ballot or the bullet. And that is relevant right now, 2020. Is it the ballot or the bullet? Yesterday, Philadelphia responded, it will be the bullet. So we want to talk about that, and we've got assembled a group of our brothers and sisters who are very good supporters to the Black Reality Think Tank and have been for a while. We appreciate them so much. I've asked a couple of new people to come with us. I've asked a young brother, a very young man, whose dad was a consistent supporter of the Black Reality Think Tank, the elder Renzi Taylor, who transitioned and is now part of our ancestors. But I asked his son, who is a member of the Milwaukee County Democratic Party. He's a part of the Wisconsin State Democratic Party. And he ran for one of the positions to be a delegate to the Democratic Party. So we want him to come on, talk a little bit in this conversation, what we're sharing, and hopefully provide with some very good information. We asked Dr. Bridges, Brother James Pugh, who's normally with him, my good buddy, Brother Timothy out of Philadelphia, wants to talk a little bit about that situation in Philadelphia, Brother Herbie White, Brother Sister Bonisha Ayan, just a lot of our friends that are normally with us each week and have been supporting us, Sister Dee Dee here in Milwaukee. And we just appreciate them so much, and we are going to have a dynamic discussion as we prepare for this upcoming election on next Tuesday. And hopefully we will have wonderful results for the African community. But we want to talk a little bit about what we can expect and what we can do. Now, I'm going to, normally each week we do an ancestral profile. We have to always pay tribute to our ancestors. But I thought I would do something different. And for the sake of time, we're going to waive the ancestral profile. And we're going, and I think our ancestors would want us to talk about the issue or the question that I'm getting ready to raise now. So instead of doing an ancestral profile, I am going to do a profile of the Electoral College, the institution that is responsible for ultimately giving us the President of the United States. But we want to make sure that all of our listeners are aware of that and aware of how that process works as we get ready to go into this election. As I said, we appreciate you so much, but it's a good informational source. I've asked Dr. Bridges, because he is a historian, he has been very active on our program with information and history relating to our people. So I've asked him from his historical perspective, and as an educator who's taught in the universities of the United States and who has had to teach this history, if he would share with me the duties. So I'm going to very briefly in a, just give you a few factors about the Electoral College that I think you should know, and then just kind of ask him to tell us, let him tell us how it works. And then I've asked Brother Pugh, James Pugh, who is a philosopher from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, if he would also join us, talk a little bit about the Electoral College as well, because this is a critical election coming up. I'm been on this planet 76 years, and I must say that I do not recall ever seeing an election of this nature or what's at stake in this election. I was my first political involvement was John Kennedy election. That was my first. I recall all the way back from the Truman administration, based on my parents talking, and I remember each summer that those elections were taking place. We would watch those conventions, particularly the Democratic convention. They would watch them, and I would sit there with them and watch them too, and just kind of understood. But and I remember there was a lot of critical issues involved there as well. But I don't know. And since I've been voting since the Kennedy years, I don't think I've ever seen a thing so critical that we need to deal with. We're dealing with a disease that is killing our people daily, and is continuing to rise. And you have administrations that don't seem to care anything about it. We have African-American people that are being shot down in the streets by police officials almost daily. And that may have been happening before, and because we did not have the technology, we don't really know, but at least now we know, so that make a difference. We know that our people are being killed by folk who should not be killing them. That's an issue. You're dealing with a man who is in the White House that has sort of opened up the possibilities of white supremacist groups and all kinds of bad racial behavior and sort of fragmentation of the community, pitting one group of people against the other. He's up for being accused of rape at the part of this election. You're talking about that he has stirred up hate groups to the point that they're now preparing Homeland Security and the FBI to be prepared on Election Day for the militias and the militias are out of Wisconsin that are going to be coming into the polls, patrolling the polls, and possibly intimidating people from voting. I haven't seen that. And I'm sure that there have been cases like that, particularly back during the years of slavery and staunch segregation, but I wasn't around then, so I don't know. But what I'm telling you, what I saw and what I see. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Electoral College. I'm going to ask Dr. Bridges to come on and say a few things. There have been, most of the times, when we go to the polls on November, that first Tuesday in November, what we are doing is we are casting a vote for individuals that will get together at the completion as delegates for the Electoral College. So when we vote for President and Vice President of the United States, we are actually voting for presidential electors, known collectively as the Electoral College. It is these electors, chosen by the people, who then elect the chief executive. The Constitution assigns each state a number of electors equal to the combined total of the state Senate and House of Representatives delegation. At present, the number of electors per state ranges, with the District of Columbia having 3 and California having 55, which gives a total of 538 delegates. And so to be elected, the President of the United States, a candidate needs a majority of 270 of those electoral votes. And that's how it's done. And then I'm going to let Dr. Bridges tell you how it works and how it goes. In fact, there have been 5 times that the president was chosen by the Electoral College over the popular vote. Now, if the popular vote comes up with their candidate based on the number of votes, the Electoral College has to ratify that. And there have been 5 times when the Electoral College went against the popular vote. And the first one was John Quincy Adams in 1824. The second one was Rutherford B. Hayes, 1876. The third was Ben Harrison in 1888. The fourth one was George Bush Jr., 2000. And the last one is Donald Trump, 2016. Those are the 5 people that chose the president over the popular vote. So, with that, that gives us some beginning. Dr. Bridges, as I said, is going to tell you just a little bit more about how it works. Dr. Bridges, how are you doing this afternoon, my brother?
I'm okay, my brother. What about you?
Doing great, great. Tell our people a little bit more about the Electoral College process, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let me talk about it just for a couple of minutes here.
Sure, no doubt.
Pardon me?
I said, however you want to do it, go right ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One thing I was about to say is that, first of all, when you look at the masses of the people today who are going out to vote, as well as when you look at the history of the Electoral College, and it even says it anywhere you read, it's very complicated. Most people do not understand it, as a matter of fact. did a good synopsis of the Electoral College and how it comes from the 538 electors and 207 or more required to, of course, be the majority. And the reason it was set up, I want to go back a little bit into how it was really set up. One reason it was set up, when we look at the electoral vote, you have the electoral vote, and then you have the popular vote, you see. And the popular vote is the one I think that most people believe is what causes the president to be elected and the vice president. But the popular vote is one vote per man, and they just count the straight votes. That's the popular vote. That's without using the Electoral College. But as you mentioned, Electoral College was a group of men who would represent the various states in the United States, senators, about two from every state, which would be about 100. Now, and see, that was one camp that was going against letting the people elect the president by a straight popular vote, because they thought that during the time when this nation is in its beginnings, they thought that the voters didn't have the resources to really be fully informed about the candidate, especially in rural outposts. Now, if we didn't have the Electoral College and did not have people needing to be represented in smaller places, then we wouldn't have the Electoral College. Even candidates probably would not even go to small rural outposts around the country to campaign, because they wouldn't see those little small groups as being important to the whole process. So the early formers of this whole idea of the Electoral College thought that that these voters would lack the resources need to be informed about the candidates, as I said before, especially in those rural outposts. Second, they also feared a headstrong Democratic mob steering the crowd astray. And thirdly, a populist president, meaning one coming from the popular vote, or one vote per man or one vote per man per woman, a president appealing directly to the people would command a whole lot of power, and they didn't want to see that much power in one particular man. So there was a woman, but man back during that time. But so there was a debate that came about, and they had a compromise that mm-hmm. based on the idea of electoral intermediaries, and these intermediaries wouldn't be picked by Congress or elected by the people. Instead, the states would each appoint independent electors, as you said, mm-hmm. who would cast the active ballot. And they actually, Dr. Rogers, they actually cast the ballot for the presidency. Mm-hmm. We don't do it. Most of us think that when we go vote that we are casting a vote for the president or the vice president. But the votes are actually cast by these electors, as you mentioned earlier. Okay. And there also was another question in when we look at the history of the Electoral College. They had to also decide how many electors that were going to be assigned to each state, and in trying to decide that, here we come. When I say we, I mean enslaved people.
Right. Exactly.
That was a divide.
Exactly.
Do you follow? Were you with me?
No, no, I'm with you. Yeah, go ahead. Right ahead. That's right.
And that was a divide between slave owning and non-slave owning states. Now, when we look at the Electoral College and its history, first of all, let me go back. It actually is a result of what came from the Roman Senate.
Right.
This government is based upon the Roman Senate, which was preceded by the Greeks. But, of course, the United States came later on after the Roman Senate. The Greeks were first in terms of white folk or Europeans with this whole system that we're talking about. So you had the Greeks, the Romans, and then the whole idea of the term senator itself comes from a Latin word, senatus, which means elder or older person, and these were considered to be the wise men of Rome who actually put this whole process together, which we follow today in this system. And also, another point before I get back to slavery and enslaved people, we find that a major part of the whole system was being a landowner and owning property.
Yes, exactly.
And this is why property has become so important in the American system today. Ownership of property, voting, property. If you own property, then you should be able to vote. You should have some say-so. And see, since black people are most, for the most part, are the landless and don't own the land, and then we can even trace it back a little closer into the present time by not taking it all the way back to Greece or Rome, but we could take it back to the manorial system in England, where you had the landlords and you had the nobility. It came from the whole system of class, is the point I want to make. It's a system of class based upon how much land a person owned.
Okay.
You had the nobles and you had the serfs. You had the landlords and the landless. And this is where the whole idea today of landlord and tenant comes from. The landlord owns the house that you live in, the apartments that you live in, or whatever the case may be. But this whole system goes back to a system of class in England or in Europe. And when Africans were brought here and enslaved, we were not a part of this class system.
Right.
So we were completely and totally left out. So they had a question. They say, should or shouldn't the founders include slaves in counting the state's population, since it's mainly based on population? So in 1787, about 40% of the people living in the southern states were enslaved people, about 40%, and they couldn't vote. And for example, James Madison from Virginia, where enslaved people accounted for 6% of the population, knew that either a direct presidential election or one with electors divided up according to free white residents only wouldn't fly in the South.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they had to decide on what they were going to do. So the right of suffrage is what they really called it. I'm going to give our listeners a new term. The right of suffrage, or the right to vote, was much more diffusive in the northern than it was in the southern state, that Madison said. And the southern state would have no influence in the election, you see.
Right.
So they had what was called the three-fifths compromise. And,
Which is still in the Constitution.
And this is where we come in. When I say we, mean African people.
Yeah.
All this other stuff that I talked about before with Greece and Rome, the census, the manorial system in England, and ownership of property and all that, that had nothing at all to do with us.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
But we came in when we were brought here and placed in the system, and the early founders of this country couldn't decide whether or not we were going to be human beings or not, because if we were going to be human beings, then of course, if you had slaves on your plantation and you saw them as human beings, then they could vote, and then they would tilt the scales.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was more of us in the South than there were in the North, because this is where we were needed in terms of working the sugar, the cotton, the
right.
sugar cane, the tobacco. So the result was a controversial, and they call it the controversial three-fifths compromise, in which enslaved black people would be counted as three-fifths of a person for the purpose of allocating representatives and electors and calculating federal taxes.
Right.
The compromise, and this compromise ensured the southern states would ratify the Constitution and gave Virginia, which was home to more than 200,000 slaves, and we know why that is, because Jamestown, and where we were first brought here along the James River in Virginia, and so that gave us a quarter or 12 of the total electoral votes required to win the presidency.
Right. So you see, and that's why I want to talk about this tonight. That's why we wanted to bring this on in the beginning of the election, because it's so critical. And very clearly, as you said,
complicated. I'm trying to kind of make it simple so that our people can understand the history of it, where it came from,
and why
it's critical today. We really, our vote, and we'll get to go ahead. Let me, I cut you off, but our vote really it means something, but in one sense, but another sense, it doesn't. Go ahead.
And so that's why we need to look at this and see the whole electoral college process has some other deep seated issues involved as well, too. And I just want to mention the fact that the tradition is that the voters, you know, choose the presidential electors, not the president, the electors. Thus,
that's right. Who then choose the president,
who
right?
Who then choose. And those people are not necessarily chosen. These are the privileged
exactly.
few of that particular party. The Democratic
that's why
Republican
I brought,
Party.
That's why I brought that in about the landowners and the people who are
that's
part
right.
of those. Right, right.
A lot of times an elector can be a governor. It can
that's
be
right.
a state legislator. It can be some of the local officials. They don't have to
Actually.
Be. They don't have. They're not chosen by the people. So when they
no.
go there, they can say, "Hey, we're gonna change this around. This ain't good." And and that's what we want to make sure. Now, this is. Let me just say to our listening audience, those who might be listening on the internet, and so forth, that we're not discouraging you to vote. We just let
no,
you know.
No.
We don't. We're not saying that. We're just letting you know what's behind as we talk the rhetoric that we talk about things. While we have to be mindful of a lot of times of what's going on. And so that's the basis for our discussion. As I said, I asked my good brother James Pugh to come. He can also add some additional factors here because the ramifications of this electoral process carries out into a lot of the actions that you see Donald Trump doing right now. And so maybe he can share some of that with us when, you know, we open up to that. But Dr. Bridges, I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm trying to take my time and trying to really make it clear so we can understand that the little man, the little and even the poor white man, and of course the black man, were not really considered in all this.
Right.
It's about the people that had money and prestige and some prominence in the community
exactly.
who actually made who are the decision makers, and this is where it actually. Comes from when we look at the whole idea of the Electoral College, and then we can even relate this to today and take a look at felons, how they the Florida I think just allowing their ex-felons to cast votes, but felons were not if you had a felony charge you could not even vote in this country, and for the most part you can't even now vote if you have a felony charge, and of course even though you've served your time. You paid your retribution. You paid whatever you're supposed to pay by serving your time in federal institutions around the country,
mm-hmm.
But you're not allowed to vote. And what else does that tell you now? That tells you, and I don't have the stats right now, statistics. But when you look at the statistics of black men and black women who are in prisons in this country. Look at what that does to the vote.
Right.
Again, you see, you're dealing with people who have basically been land poor and landless who don't have a chance to vote. And then you cut them off again by laws and rules and regulations that cause people to become incarcerated, whether fair or unfair. We end up being the most incarcerated group in the society, which again cuts the vote of black people. You
mm-hmm.
see,
right.
So it's a lot to it. As you said before, more than just going to the poll to vote. But one thing, and I'm going to be quiet in a minute. But one thing that Stokely Carmichael used to tell us all the time, he was saying, the capitalism is designed to confuse the masses of the people.
Yeah.
And as I said from the outset,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of my conversation. The masses of the people do not understand all of this.
Mm-hmm.
We have not been taught all of this in our civics classes in high school and in college.
No, we
haven't been taught this kind of information
okay.
and don't understand. We think that once we vote, that there's one man, one woman per vote, and they're going to just count the votes and depend on how many votes there are
yeah.
for Trump or how many, right.
Yeah.
But it's much more complicated.
That. Right, exactly. And so that's why a lot of times, and thank you again, Dr. Bridges, I appreciate that.
Let me just say this, Dr. Rogers, I'm going to be quiet. And one thing I want to say, too, is that in 1787, when all this really began at the signing of the Constitution of the United States, at the Constitutional Convention, there were no political parties in 1787. The
mm-hmm.
drafters of the Constitution assumed that these electors would vote according to their individual discretion. Not the dictates of a state or national party.
Right.
But today, most electors are bound to vote for their party's candidate. And that's why that's how the electors come up with who they're going to nominate. They're going to nominate along the party line. Mm-hmm. But during that time, there were not even any parties at all. Exactly. So I'm quiet now.
Okay. And so to our listeners, one of the things we like to do on the Black Reality Think Tank is guide you to resources that you can use to look at some of this, because it is important. I would suggest a good place to start is to go to the website www.history.com. That's the History Channel. And go into that search portal and put Electoral College. They do a real good breakdown, including give you the name, the number of electoral votes out of each state. And for instance, one of the reasons why you hear so much about California is because California has 55 electoral votes.
That's right.
Texas has 38. Florida has 29. Pennsylvania has 20.
And those are the big states.
That's who carries. Right. That's who floats this thing. Because we broadcast here in Wisconsin. Wisconsin only carries 10. But it is important. It's a 10. It's an important 10 in others. The smallest, District of Lumber, the Dakotas, Montana is small.
they're small.
Those are small numbers. But still, collectively together, you take that whole Midwest area, you're looking at about 50 some votes. So if that whole Midwest area, Montana, the Dakotas, Idaho, Iowa, Nebraska, is all Republican, that's 55 votes right there, electoral votes. So that's why you got to pay attention to that. So to our guests, to our audience, go to the historychannel.com, put in electoral colleges, and they give you a real good detailed description of all of this. This is a place you can look at. Okay, we're talking about the elections. We are a call-in format. Our number is 215-490-9832. So if you would like to join this conversation as we move along, by all means, give us a call. We started off our program today with the quote from the great Malcolm X. It was displayed by the Denzel Washington movie that he played Malcolm X, but it was done real well. I couldn't get a clear verbal from any of the other speeches that Malcolm did, so that was a good one. But it was an excellent piece, and he talked about the ballot or the bullet. And I indicated, and I started off our program tonight, is that that is the question still right now in 2020. Will it be the ballot or the bullet? And very clearly, Philadelphia has answered theirs, and they cast their vote already. They said it's the bullet. And there's a whole story behind that. So I'm going to go over here to my dear brother, Timothy, who is always here. He's a very loyal supporter of the Black Reality Think Tank, and ask Brother Timothy if he can shed some light on Philadelphia deciding that it's going to be the bullet for them and not the ballot. Good afternoon, Brother Timothy.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Rogers, Dr. Bridges, Benisua, she's there, and everybody else who I didn't mention, and no harm.
Right, yeah.
Intended.
Thank you so much.
But let's go. And I'm going to say this, that right now, at this present time, we have an incident at 61st and Locust Street. And 61st and Locust Street, that's right.
I want to hear about it. Yeah, I knew. That's why I was glad that Dr. Rogers said you'd be there. Mm-hmm.
Yes. The middle class area, and if you know anything about Philadelphia, it's three blocks away from the Moon Bombing, because the Moon Bombing was 62nd and Osage. So you have Spruce, Locust, Pine, Osage, Larchwood. And a mother called in distress about her son who has a mental problem, according mm-hmm. to what I'm told. And she needed the cooperation of the police to maybe calm the situation down, diffuse it. And the police officers arrive, and there's a domestic problem with her son. The son is the one who's the victim. Mm-hmm. Somehow he comes out of the dwelling, his house, and when he comes out, he has a knife. Mm. And she had already warned the officials his problem. So at that mm-hmm. point, she thought they could handle it. And like somebody like Sister Benicia would always talk about, our mental state. See, we have to realize our mental state with our physical state, and they're calling you because they want you to just fuse the mental state to slow down on the physical. Instead of them slowing it down, he has the knife, and they feel attacked because he's coming after them. Now, I guess anybody who understands law enforcement, I heard that he's 6 feet away. Now, I'm going to tell you something about me being a martial artist. We train to fight people with knives. And when people stab you, they stab you, awkward. Now, I want to put myself in that position. Somebody's coming at me with a knife. They're not going to be like in the West. No, they're going to come after me and stab me awkward. Now, but as a police officer, I asked my friends, how do they handle situations like that? You shoot to stop or you shoot to kill? They said they shoot dead center. Can right. you break the rule psychologically to shoot him if he didn't have a stun gun and maybe like nip his leg or his arm? I mean, come on, man. I mean, you have a control of a revolver, a blackjack, and a whole entire force, and that's so you could bring the Navy, the Marines, and everything else in. So you couldn't have nipped him on his leg or his arm where you could slow him down at that present time. Y'all could have apprehended him with a second police officer. Instead, these white folks, in their mind psychologically, I think there were two white folks, have in their mind, I got this big black man who's armed, and I got to kill him. Automatically, they're going on alert. But you always have places where you had, in the South, Dylan Roof, or you had Timothy McVeigh, they grab these people and somehow apprehend them, and they're armed.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Philadelphia blew up. And Dr. Mm-hmm. Bridges, a place they attacked was 52nd Street. You know about 52nd Street, that main thoroughfare, that golden strip.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the same place that it was before. Now there are Asians and Pakistanians in 52nd Street. Few black businesses. So black people are depressed.
That's Westfield, isn't it? That's Westfield, isn't it?
That's right. They no longer have those businesses. Yeah. And so what they do, when we protest, they tear them up. They go in a Foot Locker. And now take stuff, tear it up, burn it up. They tear up cop cars. They explode them. They fought 29 cops. They injured 29 cops.
That's right.
Yeah, man. Let me tell you, man. They hit. I don't know if you have Family Dollar. Hit a Family Dollar. Hit a Foot Locker. They hit a drugstore. All those things are important that we no longer have anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So I'm trying to tell you that that if they don't have a way of defusing and handling the police department, matter of fact, that's one of the questions on the ballot for us November 3rd is are we going to vote for a police advisory board? That's an important question for the people who are into voting or the ones that are not. Yes, I'm going to tell you something right now. Listen to me. The system has the Supreme Court, and they also have the judges, and they have the Army, the Navy, and the Police Department. All we got is the vote. We right now have the vote. Now, if you're going to rush to the poll to change who's in office right now and vote, that's one thing. But if you don't vote at all, then we got to deal with what's there now. Now,
Let me ask you something right quick. Do you see either one of these candidates being able to contribute to the ceasing and desisting of this quick response of these police officers killing people in our streets? Do you see any kind of effort from any one of their language and their verbiage that would show that they will do that, that we can see a result after next Tuesday? You see anything?
I will say to you, I see good verbiage and not verbal garbage. I can tell you that what I've seen of Biden, and I've been knowing Biden a long time because I know I ran for state rep twice in Congress. Been knowing him a while. And I like Kalama. Now, she's had a bad background in the DA, of course, in California. That's a DA dude. Attorney goes to school to be a public defender to get you off. A prosecutor who wants to come out and become a prosecutor, he or she wants to jail you. That's how it is. But now, I'll tell you this, that I think that they could do it. And I like the lineup because I think he's not going to be there for so long. But we're looking at the first black woman president, or the first woman president, period, I like that part. Now, that's another situation going on. If we can get in her ear and have her do what she's supposed to do, that's another thing. But I'm telling you that at this present time, Philadelphia's on the map. I'm going to tell you why. They're right now meeting in church. You got the mayor there. You got the police commissioner there. She's a black woman who was piped in from another place.
Mm-hmm.
And she's up in her head with all this. Okay? And you have the politician there, you have the activist there, you have the minister there, you have the plumber, the electrician, all that is there. And they're saying that they showed a film, I haven't seen it, where they had a situation where a white man had a weapon and he was not harmed. And they're saying, well, why is it that a black man in your community, in his own neighborhood, you got to shoot him down?
Mm-hmm.
You have to explain that. Dude, that's what we face with now. We say, it stops here. We're saying maybe Philadelphia will be the landmark where it stops here. Now, let me tell you something. Listen to me. Dr. Rogers and Dr. Bridges, you understand 52nd Street. We no longer have the resources in our neighborhood. We no longer have, see, listen to me. New York and Harlem was a solid community. Atlanta has a solid community. Maybe what you're talking about, North Carolina had a solid community. We don't, listen, they're depressed. There are no jobs. We under pandemic. Children aren't in school. All these things are happening at one time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why we need to ask ourselves about the leadership. And that's what we're here to talk about.
Exactly.
And Timothy, since Dr. Rogers mentioned the leadership, I wonder, because I'm kind of familiar with the case too in Philadelphia, the police commissioner is a black woman. Now, that is correct, right?
Yes, that's correct, sir.
Right. And when I read about her, I looked at the state. In other words, it sounds like, now you never know, but it sounds like in her statement, she's really going to try to get to the bottom of this. She didn't take the hardcore stand like Sister Lightfoot did in Chicago, the mayor of Chicago, when she spoke out against the people in the streets after the killing of George Floyd. She didn't come down and condemn the people, but this Sister Danielle something, I can't think of her last name, you know her last name, Danielle.
Right. Her last name is Outlaw.
Exactly, Outlaw. Right. And she seemed like she was sympathetic and empathetic with the people. That, right. Is that what you pick up,
I agree. Let's just think, she's from Portland. You know
okay.
what I'm saying?
Okay.
So
I'm
Portland
glad you told
is not
that.
Different
right.
from Philadelphia and New York and North Carolina. So I'm going to tell you something. If we can get in her ear, we could work with her. Because she's young and she can be worked with. Now we're going to see. This is important, Dr. Rogers and Dr. Bridges. We want to see now where you line up at now. Now you got this position. It's just like any congressman, any mayor, once you able to bring the goods to Philadelphia or North Carolina or Chicago, we want to know now you're in there, how you line up and how you bring this in.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to be like a Kanye West and an Ice Cube and work with them, and you're going to work with your people.
Okay.
And one thing,
this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the rubber meets the road, you know?
Uh-huh. And one thing I noticed about it, too, like you said, being from Portland and then moving to Philadelphia, that's almost like, as you know, Bill, too, almost like night and day. Portland, Oregon, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I mean, come on now. West Coast, East Coast. Philadelphia's a black city, big city, small Portland,
and
Portland basically white. So she's in an entirely different situation. She really is.
Okay.
Now, when I talked to her, and when George Floyd, unfortunately, was killed, we marched from the OVK statue to the African Museum in Arch Street. She said, Tim, I'm one of y'all. She's an AKA. You know. I said, well, let me tell you something. How you prove what you are by your actions, we will soon see. And I said this to people about Philadelphia. Philadelphia, man, we fight here. Like in Oakland. They fight here. They fight in Oakland, man. Blow stuff up in Oakland.
Right.
Bill, when I heard that this had happened in Philadelphia, what was going on, Bill, I thought about the fact that, you know, like when we were growing up, you know, you leave in North Carolina. Now, Washington, D.C. is one thing. Even Harlem, New York is one thing. But when you start and Newark, New Jersey is one thing. But when you start talking about Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, you're talking about the toughest of the tough. Because it goes back to the black mafia there, and I was wondering what would happen if there was a situation, say, like when black people were controlling all those communities in Philadelphia, though they're not now. How it would be if if that was still around, because Philly's a tough, right. tough town.
Okay, yeah, well, brother Timothy, before you get out, you know, our discussion tonight is not specifically about Philadelphia. We're talking about the presidents, and I don't want to cut you off or sound rude, but we got a bunch of folks online that I'm sure want to talk about the presidential piece. I'm going to come back. I just wanted to use the Philadelphia situation as a kickoff because of Malcolm's speech, The Ballot or the Bullet. And it seems like bullets is still dictating how things are going to be run. And so as a result of that, I wanted to see what your comments were about Philadelphia. So what I'm going to do is switch over here a minute to one of our other calls. I asked a young man to join us tonight who was one of the delegates for the Democratic Convention, and he ran for that seat. He's been very active in Wisconsin politics, and I've asked him to join. I did ask him also, did he have any information on the Electoral College piece for his information, and who had been in particular, I guess in terms of Wisconsin, who had been chosen already as that will be representing the members of the Electoral College in terms of the voting. But anyway, I'll let him talk and let him kind of give us his input on what he thinks might be the advantages and the disadvantages for Joe Biden as well as Donald Trump. So good afternoon, Elder Taylor. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very, very well and honored to be part of this discussion that is definitely much needed.
Thank you.
Not just in this setting, but across this nation. And definitely also, Dr. Rogers, for the wonderful tribute you gave to my father in the beginning of this radio program. When I think about Wisconsin politics, as many may or may not know, Wisconsin has a way of being a battleground state, or also known as a swing state. And so as of right now, believe it or not, when you look in the urban areas, we have a lot of Biden supporters, even in the suburban areas such as Mequon, Thamesville, and River Hills. There are known as a Republican area, but they definitely have a lot of Biden supporters out there. I will say that as Wisconsin goes, so goes the nation. And as you mentioned previously, with the other different states, larger states as well, even though we do have 10 electoral votes, Wisconsin definitely makes a statement in the election of a president. And so I think it would be very incumbent upon us to realize and know that even though it has 10 electoral votes, Wisconsin is definitely one of the highlighted states. As a matter of fact, the vice president will be here on Friday to be campaigning in Wisconsin because it's such a crucial state. But I will say this, though, when you look at the advantages and disadvantages for us as African-American people with Biden or, as I especially call it, number 45, with President Donald Trump, we have to really look at the big picture here. And I believe that the advantages of having Joe Biden as the president would be, number one, and I've been saying this for a while now, we really need to look at the big picture and see, okay, where have we come in these 4 years? I also think that we need to really look at ourselves as the African American people as well and say, mm-hmm. how can we enforce Joe Biden to be an advantage to us? I was mentioning that I was listening to the brothers before, and they were talking about Kamala Harris and her stance and things like that. And I really believe now more than ever before, not just even with the historical aspect of her being on the ticket with Joe Biden, but I really believe that we really have an opportunity to get some things done. And if you notice, I think we focus a lot on the presidential election. I'm staying on topic with that. But we also have the Senate before us as well. Okay. And that is very, very important as
well.
Very
important, very important.
And so I want to say that's critical because that control, they're the lawmaking body along with the House of Representatives that makes the decisions along with the president. And so I would say this, with Vanderbilt having Joe Biden as president would be that we're able to see HBCUs be benefited financially, I can say that.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we'll be able to see is healthcare. Healthcare is very critical for our community. because most of our people have pre-existing conditions. And when you think about it, and I'm going to talk about the disadvantage of Donald Trump being president, is he wants to, right now in the Supreme Court, they have where they want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Now, that is dangerous because most of our people have underlying health conditions anyway. So if you're going to cut all these millions of people off the roads, you're really dealing with another issue other than racism.
Right.
And so to that end, we need to really look about. Now, I will say with Trump, I mean, as a Christian believer, I will say that there are some things that he does stand for that does affect our community. But overall, when you look at the big picture, I really believe that our best interest would be in Joe Biden. But also, too, we also need to hold these people accountable as well. And I'm convinced by sitting at the table that we don't see enough accountability that's there. And so I will say, even being one that ran for DNC delegate, there weren't that many of us that were selected or that were that ran for it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I would say that we really have to really look at the big picture and say that, you know, the disadvantage of having Donald Trump is we will have more upheaval, more racial tensions. We will have, you know, the same thing that's going on now. He's back in the police department, and that's not what we need right now. We need a leader that's going to bring peace in the midst of this craziness that we're in.
I understand. That's good. That's great. Okay. Well, thank you. Hold that, because I'm going to come back to you again. In a few minutes at the top of the hour here, I'm going to open up all of the mics so that we can. All have just as hope, open dialogue and discussion. But I just wanted to grab some of the key people that I had asked to come on and say some things before we do go to that. Let me go over here to Brother Pugh. Brother Pugh, anything that you want to add to that Electoral College discussion we had, or if everything is okay with what was said with that, then my question to you then would be, how do you think looking at the two candidates, what can we expect in terms of African-American community, and what is it that we can look forward to as that might be a detriment from these two people? So I'll give you a few minutes to talk about that.
good evening, everybody.
Good evening, my brother.
I would say that there's no question. There's not even a possibility of a choice. We have to go with Biden. We don't have an option. Donald Trump is Hitler. But in terms of the Electoral College and what's going on in Philadelphia, they're all related. The fundamental problem of the police is that we've got economic inequality, and their job is to enforce that. We've got a value system that basically says that, you know, there's no limit to what people should aspire to have.
Hmm.
We've got a court system that basically has created laws that enable police to kill human beings with impunity. And then finally, we have police unions who've gotten disqualified immunity that once again means that they have no accountability. Now, what that means is that if you want to solve the problem of the police, you can't do it with a police chief. You can't do it with police. You're going to have to address these four systems, and that means that you've got a political problem. That relates to the Electoral College. In order for somebody to become president, they need 270 electors. It's been pointed out tonight that, for example, Wisconsin has 10. And so what the strategy is right now has to do with men.
Okay.
Than 70 electors.
Exactly.
And it turns out that the way that the map looks right now, in terms of the state that he won, 70.
Brother Pugh? He might have dropped. His phone was going in and out. Okay, we'll come back. Brother Pugh, if you hear us, come back on. I'll open it back up. While we're doing this, let me just go real quickly. This will be the last one before we take a break. Sister Ayan, you have definitely, in reference to electing and politics, you have taken the agnostic viewpoint, and I wanted to see how you see all of this, and looking at what's ahead for us as African people. You got these two candidates that are running for the highest office in the nation that very well can have a lot to do and impact black community. How do you still feel about this electoral process? Sister Yan, how you doing?
I'm okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Greetings, brothers. How y'all doing? How's everybody?
Good.
So I feel the same. It'll never change.
Okay.
My observation of this system is that it is rotten to the core. And any ideas that black people, or even the people, the masses, for that matter, will change any of this is indicative of the fact that we're living an illusion. I hadn't paid too much attention to politics until Clinton was running, Bill Clinton was running for office. And he got up there with his sunglasses and his saxophone and had a little, what, you know, some people would call swag, and used that to con black people to vote for him. And we fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And as soon as this cracker got into office, I can't say as soon as, but when he got into office, he got busy taking our black men off the streets across this nation and putting them in jail for nonviolent offenses. And I think there's three strikes you're out. I don't know if that's when that occurred, but some are doing life in prison right now for nonviolent offenses. Biden was right there. Hillary was there. These people have been destroying our communities in several ways, economically, educationally, shutting down schools. There are so many attacks on a black community by whomever gets into office that I'm blown away that we can't see that this is an exercise in futility. Now, you may have some successes here and there because they're not going to, you know, they got to make what I see this political system is doing is giving us the illusion of being of this being a democracy. It is not.
Okay.
It is not. This is fascism. This is totalitarianism and straight up racism. But they're trying to give us and the rest of the world the illusion that this is a democracy so that they can keep doing what they want to do and always have, you know, can go back to, but we're a democracy and you can change things and nothing changes.
And, you know, historically, that has always been a big question, that does America have democracy? And a lot of people...
It is not a democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm so glad that you did what you did, that we had the education that we had at the beginning of the show about the Electoral College. That's an archaic system that needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't consider the masses, what the masses of people want, so it needs to go, period.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to talk about something, if we want some kind of success in political realm, that has to go.
Yeah.
We need to be talking about, as a people, if we want some empowerment, or forget your voice being heard, they can hear you and not pay attention, they don't pay attention. But we should be looking at, and I talk about this guy all the time, Greg Palast, who's out there telling us, he's pleading with us to listen, that they are destroying our votes. They're throwing our votes in the garbage can. You know,
right.
by the thousands, maybe the millions.
Yeah, and they're doing
they're
it
doing
too, right?
They're doing everything they can.
They're right. And even with this mail-in stuff and all this COVID controlling the polls.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a plot.
They're doing everything, and every creative, demonic creative thing that they can do to stop people from voting. And so I don't want to go too long, but, you know, people ask, well, if voting wasn't important and effective, then why are they doing, you know, why they're doing so much to stop us?
All right.
Well, you know, why do they kill black men in the street like dogs?
Like dogs.
You're dealing with a sociopathic system, and I'm frustrated because we are drunk off the liquor of hope. They're feeding us hope. If you elect this one, if you elect that one, and if you look at the black elected officials that have been in office for the past, I don't know how many years, most of them are powerless to do anything. I'll end with this. One example, and I might have said this before, the sister in D.C. who, I think she named some part of D.C. Black Lives Matter Lane or something like that. You all know who I'm talking about?
Not right off. Maybe somebody
mayor.
Does.
She's the mayor.
The mayor. The mayor.
Right. Black Lives, they made a big deal. Black Lives Matter Lane, and she's marching in the streets with everybody.
Okay.
You know, but behind the scenes, she's making sure that another prison is built to put our brothers into neo-slavery. So there's a lot of trickery.
Yeah,
a lot of everything is a lie.
Yeah.
Everything is a lie.
Right.
And we keep falling for it.
Yeah, right.
And at some point, I want to see black folks start asking some relevant questions. You know,
good.
Money that's in politics, you can't even, and I said politics, you can't even be president without billions and billions of dollars. That stuff has to go in order for there to be any legitimacy to this thing.
Right.
And it's getting worse. So we're voting for terrible, which is Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Both of them are rotten. And we're voting for horrible, which is Donald Trump. I'm not voting for either one of them. One more thing, please. We got to look at Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's record. Do you actually think they're going to change? Joe Biden at 88, he'll be 90 years old soon. Do you actually think he's going to change? Do you actually think that Kamala Harris is going to change?
But some people say
that's not going to happen. It never has, and it never will.
Some people
until
say that a
white
vote,
supremacist system some, is destroyed.
Some people
so the
say
system
that
has to be destroyed.
Sister, some people say that the a vote to not vote for Kamala Harris and Joe Biden is a vote for Donald Trump. How would you respond to that?
Is for white supremacy to continue oppressing black people. That sounds very simple, but that's what it is.
Okay.
Kamala Harris, you know, the brothers in California can't stand her. Black men can't stand her because she was responsible for locking up thousands of black men and going after black women.
So what's the alternative?
Or some kind of truancy law. So she's going to continue. That's who she shows. They're showing you who they are.
Okay.
So either way, we're going to be crapped on.
What's the alternative?
That's my point.
What would be the alternative for us as African people to do that?
The alternative is listening, going back and listening to Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad, who are telling us that this system is racist. It's hostile toward black folk, and it's not going to change, and we need to create our own. I know that's scary for us, because every time we have created our own, and we've done it hundreds of times, you know, we invented almost everything that we use today, stove and, you know, refrigerator, but everything we do is shut down.
Okay.
So I understand us trying to hold on to some hope that the system will finally do the right thing, but it's not.
Let me take this break. I got to take this break.
So the alternative is to establish our own nation state, as Elijah Muhammad and Marcus Garvey said.
Okay. I'll come back to you when we come from the break, but let's take a quick break, and then I want to get back to Brother Pugh so he can finish his discussion as well. Let's take a quick break.
The 2020 election isn't a few weeks away. It's already here. Millions of Americans are already voting. Make sure you stand up and join them. There will always be reasons to think your vote doesn't matter. That's not new. What is new is a growing movement for justice, equality, and progress on so many issues. This really is a tipping point, and that momentum only continues if we win this election. But it's going to be close. It could come down to a handful of voters just like you. So I'm asking you to bring this thing home. Leave no doubt. vote early.
This government has failed us. The government itself has failed us. And the white liberals who have been posing as our friends have failed us. And once we see that all these other sources to which we've turned have failed, we stop turning to them and turn to ourselves. We need a self-help program, a do-it-yourself philosophy, a do-it-right-now philosophy. It's already too late philosophy. This is what you and I need to get with. And the only way we're going to solve our problem is with a self-help program. Before we can get a self-help program started, we have to have a self-help philosophy. Black nationalism is a self-help philosophy. What's so good about it, you can stay right in the church where you are and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can stay in any kind of civic organization that you belong to and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. You can be an atheist and still take black nationalism as your philosophy. This is a philosophy that eliminates the necessity for division and argument. Because if you're black, you should be thinking black. And if you're black and you're not thinking black at this late date, well, I'm sorry for you. Once you change your philosophy, you change your thought pattern. Once you change your thought pattern, you change your attitude. Once you change your attitude, it changes your behavior pattern. And then you go on into some action. As long as you got a sit-down philosophy, you'll have a sit-down thought pattern. And as long as you think that old sit-down thought, you'll be in some kind of sit-down action. They'll have you sitting in everywhere. It's not so good to refer to what you're going to do as a sit-in. That right there castrates you. Right there it brings you down. What goes with it? What, think of the image of someone sitting. An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up. When we look at other parts of this earth upon which we live, we find that black, brown, red, and yellow people in Africa and Asia are getting their independence. They're not getting it by singing, "We Shall Overcome." No, they're getting it through nationalism. It is nationalism that brought about the independence of the people in Asia. Every nation in Asia gained its independence through the philosophy of nationalism. Every nation on the African continent that has gotten its independence brought it about through the philosophy of nationalism. And it will take black nationalism that to bring about the freedom of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country where we have suffered colonialism for the past 400 years. America is just as much a colonial power as England ever was. America is just as much a colonial power as France ever was. In fact, America is more so a colonial power than they, because she's a hypocritical colonial power behind it. What do you call second-class citizenship? Why, that's colonization. Second-class citizenship is nothing but 20th century slavery. How are you going to tell me you're a second-class citizen? They don't have second-class citizenship in any other government on this earth. They just have slaves and people who are free. Well, this country is a hypocrite. They try and make you think they set you free by calling you a second-class citizen. No, you're nothing but a 20th century slave. Just as it took nationalism to remove colonialism from Asia and Africa, it'll take black nationalism today to remove colonialism from the backs and the minds of 22 million Afro-Americans here in this country. And 1964 looks like it might be the year of the ballot or the bullet. ¶¶
refuse to be what you wanted us to be. We are what we are. That's the way it's going to be. If you don't know, you can't educate us or no equal opportunity. Talking about my freedom, people freedom and liberty. Yeah, we've been cutting on the wine for much too long. Yes, we've been trying on the wine for much too long.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers, on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. We are here today talking about the upcoming U.S. presidential election. We have our community panel who are looking at weighing the options for African people. We have been offered suggestions there, all the way from looking more broadly, looking more deeply at our city and our community, and making choices that are going to help the masses. We have tried to encourage some things with the words from the past of the great Malcolm X, as he also dealt with those same issues in the 60s. And those are the things that John Henry Clark has often said: history is nothing but a current event. History is nothing but a current event. And so we are facing some of those same things today. Let me just very quickly indicate some of our other programs that are here on the Time for an Awakening .com network. We are so happy to be a part of this system. We are operating as the Black Reality Think Tank. We have three additional programs ourselves that comes under the Black Reality Think Tank network system. But there are also Time for an Awakening programs as well that I just want to quickly mention to you. One of them is on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and it is called African Perspectives, and it is hosted by my good brother, Osiemi Adelabu. He has topics and subject matters very similar to what we talk about here and things that are relevant to the African world. So be sure to listen to him every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1. And then on Mondays from 6 to 8, there's a program called Acres of Diamonds, and the host is Brother Jihad Ahmed. Brother Jihad Ahmed, Acres of Diamonds, every Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Monday from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central with Sister Dr. Maya Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. Black Therapy Central every Monday evening from 8 to 9. And then on the first and third Mondays of every month, the first and third Mondays, we have conversations around reparations from 9 to 10 with the NCOBRA group, who has done magnificent work on the looking at the reparations question. And then on Tuesday, as usual, the Black Reality Think Tank with your host, yours truly. And then on Thursday from 7 to 9, after 7, with Shani B. This is a group of young millennial women that are talking about very similar issues. And they'll be talking about this election. And they are very strong activists. They have been on the streets of Wisconsin in Kenosha and Milwaukee and Racine, protesting those killings and police shootings and those injustices. They're out there every day. And so they're here with their own talk show where they address some of the issues and some of the things that they encounter as being direct activists that are involved in the movement. And then on Friday from 8 to 10, Time for an Awakening with our dear brother Elliot and brother Richard, who are the platform developers of the Time for an Awakening Network. And they have their own program on Fridays from 8 to 10. And then on Saturday from 4 to 6 Eastern Time, Black Sister Talk with my very good sister, LaWanda Chambers, 4 to 6 Black Sister Talk. And then the elders of Sankofa, who have been doing a magnificent job of dealing with eldership and looking at how eldership is important in our community, come on from 7 to 9 on Saturday evening, Eastern Time, Elders of Sankofa. And that program is hosted by our dear brother, who is out ill right now, but we have a wonderful group of others who have been filling in for him, and we hope to see Brother Alfonso back real soon. And then on Sunday, finally, we have Time for an Awakening again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is the lineup of the Time for an Awakening system. It is all a part of the Black Talk Radio Network as well. And we've got some other interesting programs getting ready to come forward. And I am truly looking forward to them. And I very hope so that they would do that. Now, what I'd like to do, and I'm asking all of those of you who are online now to please, 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 please follow my instructions. I would like to open up the mics of all of our guests, give you a chance to chime in. We'd like to ask you to wait as one person speaks till they finish before you cut in. And also remember that all of your background noise can be picked up by these microphones, and so it's very sensitive. And so I want you to be mindful of that. But as we begin our conversation here in the second hour, I'm going to open the mic. So let me start off first. I want to ask one of our callers and give him a chance to talk. We have a caller from Franklin, Wisconsin. I want to see if she has anything to say or any questions that she might like to ask. I just have a first name. Her name is Nikki. She's from Franklin, Wisconsin. Sister, do you have any questions or comments?
I guess I have some stats I just wanted to add when you were talking about voter disenfranchisement. So 40 to 42% of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections is African American, and there is 70,000 disenfranchised in Wisconsin, over 70,000 disenfranchised people in Wisconsin, 6.1 million nationally. So I am a member of EXPO, which is Ex-Incarcerated Individuals Organizing, and I work for the ACLU of Wisconsin as a Rights for All regional organizer. Mm-hmm. And I actually just got out of prison myself, so I have multiple jobs, I am in school, and I can't vote. So me taking the job with the ACLU and the work that we do with Unlock the Vote with EXPO is kind of to get it out there that this is something, this disenfranchisement is something that has been embedded in our culture in America. And mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. is with everything going on, the police brutality and everything, the overpopulation of our prisons. This is a time that we need to start getting bills to the table that are going to change these things. And I know that it seems kind of hopeless because this stuff has been going on for so long, but mm-hmm. there are strategic steps that we need to take, and we need to be organized in taking these steps. So for me, I believe one of the first steps to seeing these things change is to get these disenfranchised voters the right to vote. And then once we get them the right to vote, we can end things like gerrymandering, and help, we can start to redistrict places so that urban areas can get the adequate representation and seating that they need in the House and the Senate. Mm-hmm. And then by doing that, we will get once people that are on probation are allowed to vote, then we can possibly get people that have been impacted more mm-hmm. by these laws and these different systematic racist kinds of mentalities. We can get them into office. And once we can get them into office, then we can start to shape the conversation differently from the inside. And I just want to encourage you guys, because I know that there can be this hopelessness around it all because it's been so long, right? But we've been all brought to this point, to this season in our life for such a time as this. And to lose hope now would be a shame, because it's often the darkest, right, before the dawn. Uh-huh. So I hope that you guys will keep the faith and keep pushing and keep doing things like this to educate people and to motivate people, because we can't give up. We don't have a choice. I mean, I don't have children, but I have a brother, I have family that I care about, and I'm sure many of you have children and families, and we do these things for the future, right, to create a better future.
That's excellent. That is exactly right. And that's a good point to start with, because for those who may not be from Wisconsin, Wisconsin has a notorious prison system. At one time, it was leading the nation in states in terms. It was right up there with New York, California, in terms of incarcerated black males in the prison systems. And these are disenfranchised people. Can you imagine what would happen if we could get some of these brothers and sisters released who are not up there for a lot of terrible things, but are just have been more so like political prisoners than they are anything else to get them free. So thank you so much, Nikki, for that comment. I know this is that's an important area in which you're working, this prison reform. We've got to work with that. We've got to get politicians in place that can assist that. And we have not had that for a while. I know Sister Lena Taylor is leading, I think, the committee in the state Senate. I'm not sure if she still, I think she still was doing that. And so very clearly we need to help and support her, see what can be done in doing that. So thank you. Thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
Okay. Brother Pew, I know you got knocked off. I don't know if you finished everything you wanted to say, but you wanted to go on?
Yeah, quickly. One, things are changing all the time. And so the ideal of change is always possible. When it comes to Trump versus Biden, you can get more change from Biden than you can from Trump because Trump assumes that he has all the answers. Whereas Biden assumes that other people might have some answers.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to Trump, it takes, as I said, 270 electoral votes to win, to become president. Trump got 306 electoral votes last time. But right now, as we speak, 173 electoral votes are toss-up, meaning that it's not, in other words, of the 306 votes that Trump got last time, 173 of those votes are toss-ups, like, for example, Georgia, Texas, and Florida, Wisconsin, and Ohio and Pennsylvania. These states are in the mix. Oh, and then finally, I really like your talk of Malcolm X piece, because one of the things he's making tells people that you can be in church and be a nationalist. Well, guess what? You can vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and be a nationalist.
Right.
So the idea that somehow or another you can only be a nationalist and that means you need to close your eyes to every other possibility, that's absurd. What you want to do is take advantage of any train that's moving in your direction. You want to use it until it starts diverging. And right now it turns out that we have the possibility of directing the tracks of the Democratic chain. Look at what AOC is doing with the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
It's forcing the party to move, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Sister Bayan, you want to respond to that?
I'd like to see how the Democratic Party is moving. What I see is that Republicans are doing what they have been doing. And that's, they use the word bully, you know, I will use another word, but they're kicking the Democrats' butts. And the Democrats don't fight back.
Okay.
So I don't see, you know, Democrats doing anything. What I do see is that they're, the Republicans and the Democrats are both controlled by the corporations.
Okay.
I do see that they basically have the same interests. I do see that Kamala and Biden have worked hand in hand again in the past to lock our brothers away. And why we're not really dealing with that, you know, we're losing our men. Why we're not really dealing with that as a community is another mind blowing issue for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would never suggest that somebody vote or not vote because that's people's personal choices.
Right.
But I know that when the times that black people did best in this nation and before the Maafa is when we were separated from Europeans.
Okay.
I literally don't see them doing anything different. Biden has dementia. We're ignoring that. He's not going to be able to make decisions in another 6 months or so.
Okay.
You know, Kamala is going to do what they tell her to do. So my eyes are open, and I just want us to see our eyes, you know, open. I'm not the only one, you know, but I just want to see our eyes open up.
Okay.
Hope is a drug. I'm going to repeat that. It's a drug. I'm not hopeless at all.
Well, you have a good point.
I just
point.
Don't take the point. Drug of hope, because hope does not empower you. It doesn't manifest anything.
Okay.
We've got to do something that manifests, you know, power for ourselves. And Stokely Carmichael said it, we need black power.
Okay. Very good. Brother Herbie White, the donkey or the elephant?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and to Dr. Bridges and Sister Benicia and everyone. The first thing I just want to mention, that Sister Benicia mentioned that Bill Clinton got on television with the sunglasses playing the saxophone. Nobody was paying attention to the fact that he was playing an Elvis Presley tune, Heartbreak Hotel. But I'm so glad that you start off the show with Brother Bridges and his explanation of the Electoral College and how it was designed to placate the Southern aristocrats so that they would sign the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that, the way we were considered three-fifths of a human being and all that, because the for them, not for us, that a vote for the presidency is a vote for the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
You show me an administration that was favorable to black people. Was it FDR?
Yes.
We know what he did for us. When Kennedy got elected, we were so happy. See what he did for us. Bill Clinton, even Barack Obama, you know, we got BS every time.
That's right.
With a bunch of promises. And everybody's all upset about Donald Trump appointing these Supreme Court justices and them rushing them through. When has the Supreme Court been a friend to black people? What Supreme Court? Regardless of who nominated them.
Okay.
The game is rigged. And we are not part of the game.
Right. That's what Sister Benicia was saying. Yes, you're right.
We're not part of the game.
Right. Exactly. Exactly right.
We're involved, but we're not included.
We're not included. Right. Let me go up here to Raleigh, North Carolina, 919-591. What are your comments? Area code 919-591. Do you have any comments or questions?
Good evening, Dr. Rogers. How are you?
Oh, good. Great. How you doing, Brother Rogers? How you feel?
I'm doing good. I didn't get the whole program. I just got off the air myself, but I was listening to the program, and one of the things that struck me is the fact that the sister is absolutely right. The only thing that we'll ever accomplish is to separate. We know that. That was told to us many, many years ago, and that is the other alternative. She's absolutely, positively right on that. But I just wanted to encourage people who understand that, who know that, that until that time comes, we still have to live in a system that is not rigged for us. We know that. And so we must have some type of proactive movement going forward, whether it be senseless or not. Because, Dr. Rogers, you're the historian. You may be able to tell me who said this, but somebody said that if you are silent in your pain, they will kill you and say you like it. And so one of the things that we have to do is always do something proactive while we're working on the third alternative. We must keep working on that third alternative, because that's the only way that we're going to get anything, you know. But at the same time, we still have to live, talking about today,
excellent,
we still have to live in this system. And so we have to do something. And I wanted to encourage those who may not vote. It's your vote,
right,
and you can do what you want to do with it, vote or not vote. But I just want to encourage you today,
okay,
that there is a reason for that.
Thank you. That's great. That's excellent. Thank you so much, Reverend Rogers. I think I have my brother here on from New York City. This is Brother Jay. Brother Jay, I think, is the one that actually convinced me to have this discussion tonight, and I appreciate him. Is that you, Brother Jay, at 646?
Yeah, it's me, Dr. Rogers. I'm sorry I typed it late, but that's I had right.
Yeah, because you encouraged me to do this. Yeah, I'm
glad it seems that you did it. I just had to laugh when the sister said about, you know, Biden dementia coming in 6 months if he get in office. And the reason why I laughed, because the Negro will be so, so happy if they got to shut Biden down and put Kamala in his place. They'll be back in the utopia state again that they had with Obama, and we'll be right back in the quagmire of getting nothing, doing nothing, and in the end, in the position that we in right now. Now, you know, the reality is the brother just stated that you all know we got to separate. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about that. But the reality is, as we talk about separating, it's how do we collectively come together as like-minded individuals, either build here or go back home and build, so that we will be able to sustain ourselves based on the lessons that we've learned previously. Okay. So that's the direction that we're going to have to look at. But mm-hmm. in the meantime, mm-hmm. we have to prepare ourselves for what's to come. And it's not good. I don't even think we understand how bad it is. I mean, just look at places like New York and right. Philadelphia right. and other spots where there's a large contingency of black folks, and what's happening with this coronavirus and how the amazing these municipalities are being shut down. And the reality is, in the big cities, which are basically controlled by Democrats, if the psychopath gets back in the office, he's not going to do anything for those states. So that's going to make it even more harder.
Right. Right.
What do we do as a people to try to help our people in those circumstances? Because I'm going to tell you something. It could become within the next 6 months or sooner worse than we've ever seen as a people since Jim Crow. I mean, it could get to the point in these major cities for black folks, honestly, like it was in the 50s, in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And believe me, we right. had a different mentality as a people in the 50s and 60s than we do today. We had a family union in the 50s and the 60s. Mm. Today, in all honesty, we really have no family unit. So we better figure out how we're going to place ourselves as a collective in a position to survive the onslaught that most of us don't feel is going to happen because they believe in this system in the manner in which we do. But we had some real serious trouble. And right. I hope we realize that if we, those of us who have studied history, know history, and have an idea on where this thing could go.
Exactly, exactly. Thank you so much, Brother Jay. And like I say, I appreciate you making this suggestion to me last week, and I'm probably through on it, and I think we're getting some good feedback on this discussion. And you brought up something that's very clear, too. One of the things about a vote for Donald Trump is he will be a lame duck president, which that means is that he does not have to, at this point, answer for anything because he's not going to be reelected anyway. Well, most of the times the president in the first 4 years is trying to do things that would obviously keep the people pleased and hopefully in the next election he can get elected again. Well, now he doesn't have to answer for nothing. So he can make all kind of crazy policies and rules, and don't forget that they held off on this stimulus money and some of this stimulus support until after the election, so that means if he is elected, there's no telling the way that will go and how those billions of dollars will be spent, you know, under his leadership. And so that's some of the things.
Yes. It's even deeper, it's even deeper than that, because the reality is this. If they don't get control of the Congress or the Senate, anything that he does, he can get away with. That's now, right. If they get control of the Congress and the Senate, then it'll be more likely they'll be able to put them in a box if they're willing to put them in the box. But let me just say this one last thing. Like I said, there's only two things I'm looking for Biden to do if he gets into office as far as black people are concerned and how we could maybe survive and move forward in this country. Number one is to maybe make Puerto Rico and Washington states, which would give you more representation that may be able to hold off the Republicans from ever getting this power that they have been able to achieve right now. And the most important thing to me at this time, more important than anything at all, is them stacking the courts. Because the reality is, with a 6-3
stacking that court.
With a 6-3 situation right now, basically everything that has been gained from 1965, when Johnson's gave us so-called civil rights and all of the other fights that we've had, will be taken away from black people and other people of color within 2 years.
Exactly.
And I guarantee it. I'm not talking about it may be, and don't never let nobody fool you, because what's going to happen is you're going to have court cases being filed, and then it's going to work its way up to the Supreme Court. And every single one of those cases are going to go two ways, 5-4 or 6-3. And that's just a fact. And never let nobody fool you and tell you that it's not going to happen. And once they finish that job, I mean, come on, they're going to take away abortion within a month. They're going to then go after Brown versus Brown, so that's going to destroy the board events. That's going to just destroy everything in regards to education, affirmative. I mean, that's how bad it's going to get. So if Biden don't get in the office and stack the court, then never tell me nothing about the Democratic Party being for any type of minority of people of color. And thank you again, Dr. Rogers.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you so much. Let me go over here to Brother Joshua. Brother Joshua, you're part of the Democratic Party, very active member. is some of the things that you're hearing about the Democratic Party, and it seems to be insensitive approach, is that what would you say to that? How do you respond to that?
Well, let me say this, with all due respect to those that have. Now, I do agree with the brother that just finished talking. I do think that we do need to really look at having an even balanced court, even with more justices on it. But I will say that when I hear, with all due respect, hearing about a third party, I agree with it to a degree, but I also will say this, that because he's one of my favorite civil rights leaders, we have to help ourselves, right? So, and I've been talking about this, I've been hearing about this whole black agenda, right? And I've been struggling with it because for so long, many of you that are on this call, with all due respect, I mean, there hasn't been one that represented, right? So now we're in a season now where there's things that need to be done. So I think that both parties, with all respect, they need to have a platform. But also, too, let's make sure that we're looking at ourselves as well, right?
Okay.
So when we think about the Democratic Party, sure, they have its challenges, of course, I would say that. But also, too, we need to really, really talk with a plan. When I hear about this black plan, this African-American plan that we need, we really need to say, excuse me, how is it going to be enforced?
because we, in our community alone, and I'm sure you all know this, we have a lot of revenue that trickles, that we spend a lot in our community and even outside of our community more so, that we can indeed bring to the table. And so if we want to see change, and I believe that change is going to come, I believe that wholeheartedly, we need to first come up and say, where are we at the table? Because if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And they really, in the parties, especially the Democratic Party, they're not going to listen if you're not going to put, if you're not going to put your money where your mouth is. So we definitely need to make sure that if we're going to have a black agenda, if we're going to have something for our people, not only do we need to, we shouldn't just elect black people because they got a D behind their name, and this may not be popular, but we got to make sure that we are looking out for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. when I hear this, that, you know, they're all the same, all the rest of that, I have to struggle with that because that's not the truth. Because you look at the parties, they're two different viewpoints. Right, so I would say this: is us as black people, since having this wonderful discussion, I'm enjoying it. We definitely need to look at ourselves and say, how can we make it better for ourselves? Mm-hmm. And if you want something done, you have to, one, hold these people accountable. And I stated before, I don't see any accountability being held. And right. those of us that are holding them accountable, is only a few of us.
Excellent. So
I would say that. We have to make sure if we want to, whoever, I mean, if Biden gets in there, we have to hold them accountable. We have to hold them accountable. Okay. And for so long, we have not. And is it because, maybe because we've come to a place where we've become lulled by their speeches? I don't know if that's the case or not, but we have to hold them accountable, and they need to hear from us. Exactly. They don't hear from us. And all the time, we as black people show up. It's during the time to vote in the presidential election. Mm-hmm. And what you said too, I wanted to finish this, Dr. Rogers, with the Congress. And you talk about if Trump gets reelected. Do you all know that all the Democrats need is 4 seats to win? And if they do, this president of the United States, his hands are going to be tied. Sure, there are some things that he can do even with the Supreme Court, but his hands will be tied. Mm-hmm. And so we have to find our voices and get on one accord and say, hey, how can we make our community better? And so, like I said, it has to start with us. We're the ones that can make the change.
Right.
And we shouldn't look to a politician necessarily, but we have to look at ourselves and say, how can we make this change? How can we make the schools better?
And see, that's right? that education
and
process.
So I think that a lot of times we put ourselves in a bad situation because they're putting our confidence in these individuals and we're not really looking at them for our best interest. Right. And so I was having this conversation too. I'm going to finish this. It was mentioned a few minutes ago about the 50s and 60s. I've done some reading and research on this. I'm an avid researcher. And I find that when you talk about one thing that we have done as the black church that we have really, the black community we have failed at, we don't mm-hmm. organize or strategize anymore. We protest, but we don't have a one accord message.
No, we don't strategize. And that's right,
so
about
that is so dangerous because when I look at throughout history, all throughout the civil rights movement, from Malcolm X so on and so forth, they were even though they had different ways of thinking, they were definitely on the same page of getting something done.
Exactly.
And we're not on one accord. And that's dangerous because how can we expect for the political parties to help us if we're not on one accord ourselves?
I agree. Okay, thank you. Let me go over here to Brother Timothy. Brother Timothy, you wanted to add a comment in this situation?
Yes, sir. I'm going to say this. I know how some people are frustrated. I hear Sister Benisawa. And, I hear other people in the background. I'm happy Professor Q's on because you got so many brilliant minds. I'm going to say this, Dr. Rogers, that I get frustrated too. But I went to school with a lot of people who, when Mayor Barry became the mayor, when we were out for the semester, they got summer jobs. They're now retiring from that job. He did that. And when I knew people who lived in Atlanta, when Mayor Jackson brought those developers in, and made sure that the brothers got a piece of the pie, I remember that part. And I'm going to say this, that you got the DA in Kentucky. Well, how are you going to get him out? You got to vote him out.
And in 1994, I met Betty Shabazz, and she used to come to an organization called the Family of Leaders. And she gave a speech one time. She said, you know, she said she knew a group of people that got together and wanted to put a church on the corner. She said, she saw these white people were next to those black people. They turned around and they bought a supermarket to make money. So these politicians, you make sure you straighten them out or vote them out. How much money are we giving them? And when you put them in there, you ask them, what's the black agenda?
Go. Okay.
Dr. Rogers, can I say something quickly?
Okay, wait. We got about 4 minutes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wanted to come back in too.
Okay, I'll let you come back. Go ahead, quick.
Yes, I'll be very quick. Tavis Smiley wrote a book. I think it was A Covenant with Black America, something like that. You remember,
yeah.
Doc?
Yeah, that was it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. There's a brother who's doing a black agenda. A lot of people talking about doing a black agenda. There are several people, black judges and other elected officials, who tried to challenge. And some were killed. Many were shut up. So we have made efforts to hold this government accountable. And oftentimes, that winds up with destruction and death. The other thing is that as we're talking about all of this, Trump is a lunatic, and he is doing everything he can to stir up a race war. So we do need to be preparing. I think somebody made reference to it. Preparing, yeah, the brother that called from New York. Preparing for either a race war or a civil war. And voting is not going to change any of the violence that is coming our way. I am not being emotional. I'm passionate, but I'm also being very realistic.
Okay.
The white militias are buying up all the weapons, all of the bullets, the bunkers. What are we doing?
Okay.
Voting is not going to change that.
Dr. Bridges?
Yes, Dr. Rise, in listening and analyzing the whole program, and tying back into our original topic about the Electoral College, brother, I think it's brother Timothy or the other brother reminded me of this. The brother you have from Wisconsin, when he talked about things being changed, and when Timothy talked about people getting jobs under Marion Barry, one thing that when you study electoral politics, you'll find that most of the change that is made is not made by people voting on the national level, but on the local level. The local level is
right.
Where you can
there
make
you
those
go.
Changes. And I thought about it when you mentioned Marion Barry and what some of the black mayors were doing in the cities during the 60s. So that's where the change can be made more so on the local level than on the national level.
Exactly.
Another thing I want to make finally, and that is Brother Pugh talked about how Malcolm talked about you can be an elk, you can be a Mason, you can be a Christian, but that does not mean that you are not a black nationalist. Go ahead and vote. But at the same time, when we were on the plantation, we worked on the plantation, but when we were off the plantation, we went to ourselves and did for ourselves at the same time we worked for the master on the plantation.
There you go.
So keep working in the plantation system if we want to, but at the same time, let's don't forget to work for ourselves.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank all of you. next week, next Tuesday, we will not broadcast because that is the day of the elections. We want to give all of you an opportunity to listen how you do on election night. But we'll be with you right after that, and we're going to have the post-election program with many of you joining in on that conversation. So, again, we thank you so much for your effort and your support. And I'll see you week after next on the Black Reality Think Tank. Thank you. Good night.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free.